Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Ithaca, New York boasts an authentic craft beverage experience, tasty farm-to-table culinary adventures, and scenic outdoor recreation among 150 waterfalls. Plan your trip today with help from visitithaca.com.
This is Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I've been a part of the HRN community for 10 years. After all that time, I'm constantly inspired by the incredible voices of our network. Each week, I record my show in the HRN studio because I'm excited to bring you, our listeners, the most important stories from the world of beer, food, cider, and more. All of us here at HRN make food radio because we love it. This year, HRN is celebrating its 10th anniversary, but we need your support to keep food radio going strong for the next decade. Join the HRN community today by becoming a member. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate right now. You can even show some love for my show by selecting Beer Sessions in the designation drop-down menu. Thanks for listening to HRN. Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, it's June 18th, 2019. We have a special show here. I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio. A few months ago, my good buddies, the beer table, you know, panel of experts, Gavin and Megan and Justin and Noah, went into the basement at Jimmy's Number 43, which is my pub, which has been closed for a couple years. And we knew that there was a stash of some pretty interesting beers, probably some Belgians that had been there for a couple of years, and they were really interested in getting them. So this whole show is about them, their ever, you know, unquenchable thirst for beer knowledge and for explaining to you guys more about the world of beer, and I'm really proud to have them here, and this is kind of their show. So guys, let's introduce, everyone introduce themselves, and just kind of in your own words, I will say that I asked Gavin, I said, you know, what do you guys... What did you guys get? Because they made a point of going through all the beers. And they said, well, we're not telling. There's some classics, some curveballs, and some mysteries. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
I'm Gavin. I'm the buyer at Beer Table at Grand Central. I was down in that murky basement digging out all these beers, and I'm really excited to pop some open.
All right.
Hey, I'm Noah. I also work at Beer Table Grand Central. And, yeah, Gavin and I cleaned off a couple hundred dirty bottles of beer together, so... Definitely.
So it was that some. Many. Like we posted on Instagram, there are a couple of photos, but you got a couple hundred bottles of beer?
Yeah, we pulled stuff that we thought might be interesting or tasty. You know, obviously not all of it's going to be in perfect condition, but we'll find out tonight.
Great.
I'm Justin. I'm the founder of Beer Table.
Justin, it's great to have you, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing your crew. We've had some really great shows with you guys. And your new friend.
I'm Evan Julius Rose.
Call him Julius.
I'm a friend of Beer Tables.
Megan, I was not there for the procurement of these bottles, but I have heard many stories
trying to
since
build
we
you
got
up,
them,
Megan.
So I'm like really excited to check it all out.
And you're also the GM, and you're the smartest person in the room.
Oh, so. Thanks, Jimmy.
True. Hey, the whole show is about, you guys have a great team, and I'm really looking forward to talking to you guys. So why don't you guys give me the intro? So we went in this basement, you know. Some people are into aging beers. I felt like 20 years ago, maybe Justin, you're there with me. 20, 25 years ago, it seemed like the diehard beer bars were always buying some good barley wines and a few things like that with the intention of aging it, and they would actually have multiple vintages. But it seems like in these days, everyone's trying to buy cans and IPAs and move them. I don't know. What's your take on all this, Justin?
Yeah, so, I mean, my experience with old beer and cellaring beer and all that came... not only from working with for Be United for a while and Matthias's influence with that, but also a weird experience I had with a dude who walked into the first beer table in Brooklyn and basically offered to sell me his whole cellar of things that he had amassed over the years and decided he was not into English beer, but he had all these old barley wines and Thomas Hardy's and J.W. Lee's and beautiful things that we still have some of, and that's kind of where we got the beginning of our cellar, and now we try to pillage others like yours.
And over the winter, we were talking about this, because I remember when I took over the space at Jimmy's number 43, it had been the basement for the old original Burke Castle and Brewski bars, which were right on 7th Street back to the 1980s. And one thing that was in the cellar at the time were like all these amazing beers, like Old Crustacean and barley wines and things that you never would have seen. And yep, I literally put them on a list back in 2005, and I sold them within a month.
Yeah.
And people got really excited about it. And you can't really go out and build a vintage beer list. I mean, it's not... Is there anyone that's doing that? Is it something that people think about?
I mean, it... Go ahead.
I mean, pretty much any time we get something that's going to age well, we'll peel off a few and set aside, you know, a quarter of a case here or half a case there. So we're keeping that tradition kind of alive. There's a few restaurant groups that I know of that have dedicated cellars and a little more buying power than Little Old Beer Table. Union Square Hospitality comes to mind that I know that they've got extensive vintage beer collections. A lot of the Belgian lambics that really develop over time, and like old stock style beers like barley wines and stuff that are meant to be, you know, for later.
But generally it's more like accidental, isn't it? I mean, I remember one year, you know, you'll get a call from an importer or a distributor and saying, oh, we actually happen to have this beer from this vintage, or we might be getting in something. Is there anyone, I mean, with Bee United, is anybody like putting aside regular vintages of certain beers? And is there a market for it too? That's the other thing.
I mean, I think it's a pretty limited market, but it, you know, it's definitely there, and I don't think it'll go away. And I think, you know, folks are much more open to understanding that beer doesn't have to just be young and fresh, but there is a giant spectrum of what's out there. So, you know, for certain, you know, Bee United has led the way on that, and I'm sure that others have some old stock of things. I'm not sure exactly who, but
so what were you guys expecting when you know we talked about Justin and you brought your crew? We went to the basement, Jimmy's number 43. Stuff had been, it's a basement, but still it was, you know, it wasn't 100% perfect condition. It had been closed for almost 2 years.
Is that how you meant to say that? It seemed as though it had been flooded and it was like fully scary, moldy. It was...
I was surprised that the floorboards supported all four of us for as long as they did.
No, I remember when you were in construction, when you were building the place, seeing the stash of things that was there that predated Jimmy's, and I was hoping we would find some of that. You sold it all.
That went fast.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, I put a beer list up when I first opened in 25, and I think I had 15 different really good vintage beers, and I sold them for $20 each, and they were gone in a month. And people started coming in, where's the vintage beer list? I'm like, that was the vintage beer list. So.
There it went.
That was it. I think that's the other hard part, is it's not something that you can maintain, you know? So people come to you expecting, like, they have XYZ, and every time I go, they're going to have XYZ, and, you know, that's a tricky thing to explain, or to maintain, I should say. Continuously well-aged. You could probably have vintage stuff all the time, but who's to say it's going to be good and well-curated?
Yeah, and you'd have to have knowing. Maybe you're out in the country and you own a property. You'd have to kind of know that it's also the source of this stuff too, right? I mean, you don't want something that's changed hands four times. You don't know where it's been stored.
Yeah.
I mean, if you do this often, Justin, I mean, do you buy some people's, you know, cellars?
We haven't, but I want to.
You want to.
It's interesting, and you know, we're learning about it as we go. And you know, we still have a decent amount of stuff that I bought in 2008 when I opened the original Beer Table. That, you know, admittedly, it's moved with me as I've moved, you know, four times since then, and that's not great for it. But you know, it's fun occasionally to crack something open and see what's great and what's horrible. And you know, there are lots of duds, but it's just a fun experiment for us to constantly learn with.
So let's go through. What's the first beer? Is it a beer or a cider?
I know you love ciders, Jimmy.
Let me see.
So, yeah, the first thing we've got is a packed basket from South Hill. Gavin, do you know what year that was?
I can find out. Give me 2 seconds.
You might have been 2015.
But, yeah, South Hill's really cool up in the Hudson Valley.
2014. Very close.
And this is, I think, all foraged apples and pears in this one. But just be really cool to see where this ended up after.
Well, if you want to know, I'll tell you my backstory on the beer since I bought most of it. I mean, around that time, the Cider Week's first Cider Week in New York was 2011. And I know at Jimmy's Number 43, we were lucky enough to host a lot of the opening events for that. Got to know some of the cider makers in New York. And Steve Silent is South Hill, and he's mostly a forager. They have these great national forests around the Finger Lakes where there's a lot of heirloom, you know, apple trees. But I'm surprised that this I haven't really had any aged ciders. And if this was a 2014 vintage, this is tasting really good. I think it tastes probably as That's good awesome. As it ever would have.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, the cellar condition, the cooling system wasn't on for a year and a half.
It was nice and cool down there.
Yeah, it's still a basement, and it's insulated. So it's probably just like anyone else's basement in New York. So I'm pretty happy with it. Cheers. Good job,
really
Steve.
Nice. It's really nice acidity.
It is nice to see. Like,
more acidic when you, than I would have thought.
One thing about tasting, you know,
acidic at all.
Tasting older wines or ciders is that it gives you a sense of just how good the cider maker was, and in this case, like the ingredients, right?
Hey, just out of curiosity, how much beer was left behind?
Oh, very little. After we pillaged?
No, I mean, how much was there when you guys went in, and how much did you leave behind?
I think we took a couple hundred bottles.
It closed in the summer 2017, so anything that was like usable, we probably used at some tastings or festivals, you know, like if there are cases of something. But mostly we were a draft-driven restaurant, so the way I bought these products was like for Cider Week, I would buy a case each of certain really good ciders, or I'd do a Belgian event maybe twice a year. So the same thing, I would stock up one case each of certain bottles. So it wasn't something that we were moving regularly. So when we closed, I took things that were in cases. So if I had a case of something, I took it. But these were all just random bottles. So there might have been one bottle of something, it might have been three bottles of something. So that's what was left behind. So it wasn't like there were stocks of like cases of IPAs or anything. So, but tell us more about what you guys saw. So you went in there, you thought it was, you didn't know what to expect, but have you tasted any of the bottles yet?
We've had two accidental tastes. While Noah and I were cleaning all of the mold and dust and leftovers off of the bottles, truly accidentally, a bottle of Stillwater. Oh, I can't remember what it was.
Something Arcana.
Got like half dropped and just enough to dislodge the cork a little bit, and we heard the CO2 escaping. So we, you know, had to bite the bullet and drink that one.
And took one for the team.
It survived. It did really. It tasted great. It was really mellow. Very little oxidation. It was.
Yeah, the carbonation was great.
Had you guys tried that one when it originally came out?
No.
No.
I did, yeah. I remember it being, like, the roastiness of the dark malts were a little ashy and a little rough and bitter, and it had really rounded out. It was wonderful, and
that's awesome.
I snagged a photo of it and sent it to Brian Strumke, the brewer, and he was like, "Where in the hell did you find this thing?"
He also dated it for us, right?
Yeah, he helped us track down the year it was made and where.
What year was it made?
Oh, God.
Stillwater, it was Arcana. I remember it. Again, that's how we used to buy. That was the way we bought one case of that beer, and it would be on like our like general bottle list. And we didn't expect to move it. You know, it could have lasted a whole year, and that's how we bought those. So if we bought any beer that was in the cellar, Evan, Julius, was I knew would be fine for 1 or 2 years. So now we've had some things that have been there for maybe 4 years. And what else did you guys get? The next stuff.
Well, so I thought, and Megan was asking if Gavin had had the Stillwater beer, you know, when it was fresh. I thought it'd be fun to then try this year's version or release of Pack Basket from South Hill. You know, it's foraged apples, obviously be a little bit different, but it'd be fun to try like a fresh version of this.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's so much variation. We're actually doing a cider event tomorrow if you're still listening, and you're in New York tomorrow, Cider Feast NYC in Williamsburg. But the reason it's interesting is that guys like Steve Salen, but Andy Brennan of Aaron Burr, it's his book release party. So if you're interested in learning about cider, get Uncultivated from Chelsea Green Publishing. Highly recommend it. It's the first book that's really talks about the whole culture of wild apples and cider, not as like a how-to cider book, but just more about what it takes to be a cider person. And it's pretty interesting. Slightly controversial for some of the commercial cider makers, but I don't think so. I think you got to get overlook if he insults, you know, your methods. I think that he just cares about good cider. So in the same way, we're seeing the fruits right here. This pack basket from 2014, 5 years later, tastes amazing. So let's taste the newer. Is this a new vintage?
I just got this from their like cider quarterly cider club. I think this is 2017 probably, 2018. But yeah, and this one doesn't have any pear. The first one did, but
this one's. I mean, noticeably sweeter than the vintage.
Oh, yeah.
Sweeter, a lot more floral on the nose.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing about these types of ciders is that they're really different, not just the fruit every year. It's also sometimes the blends are different. So it's hard to compare, you know, it's not like it's a set Bordeaux vintage that you know it's the same fields every year. I don't know if you guys think about that stuff. What else do you think about when we're tasting, you know, and going through this? I mean, Justin, I know you've... to me, you're one of my beer gods. So, what are you thinking? I think we're just enjoying,
Jimmy.
Can't.
The older one, it has a larger mouthfeel than the newer one. I don't know what might cause that. If it's the pear, if it's a flavor thing.
Just age.
Aged, it's softer, while still being tangy. It's nice.
Absolutely, I had a. Good acidic tang without getting into that, you know, vinegary acidic territory.
Do you know, are they pitching yeast on this, or are they just using the yeast on the skin?
It's all
of the fruit?
Natural.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Then it's going to have wild yeast, so it's all this, like, slow-acting Brettanomyces and wild yeast. And that stuff, I mean, doesn't really kick on for a while. And it can chew on some sugars and complex carbs that regular yeast wouldn't. So it's just going to continually develop and develop and develop and just get drier and drier.
So it should age? Is that something that,
that
one should do? Is
or
to buy
it definitely
for the
can.
Future?
It can, yeah. It has the option to.
You know, I love the older one was definitely drier. Megan noted that the new one's got more sugar. But it still tasted super clean and bright and fresh.
It's nice to know that you know, hopefully you could, ideally you would do this, you'd have a couple of vintages and you taste and you get to see, is this a label, is South Hill Pack Bass something that I would want to buy every year and lay down and then drink at 3 or 4 years? We're going to have a track record because we wouldn't know. You know, his blend might change. I know one thing about South Hill and Steve, he started a second label. I think it's called Gramophone, which is not his locally foraged apples, because he's only had a certain amount of apples. So the South Hill brand, it should be what we're drinking. It should be slightly age-worthy. It should be from heirloom apple trees. So to me, that's just like premium label. And I think this other label he started, I think it's called Gramophone, is where he's buying apples. So that's something that maybe he can make more volume of. And those are interesting things. It's great to taste this stuff. There's so many things you can do. I'm going to talk a little more on this show because I'm so excited about this. But there's so many things that you can do when you're smart, like these guys at Beer Table, and you actually care about this stuff and do this kind of tasting. Because, Gavin, I mean, we were talking. You guys could do this in your shop. I mean, you could do this as a party. You could have side by side tastings. Do you do anything usually like this, or this is something that you guys do as a staff tasting?
We do have tastings open to the public every Monday from 5 to 7, but nothing quite this ambitious. I think this is something that we would typically do with the staff. Often on Fridays, we'll have Funky Fridays, and we'll open some of the newer farmhouse and Brettanomyces fermented items. Sometimes people bring stuff from their own vintage stashes, and... it's been really educational just to see how things develop, and we are in no way, you know, in possession of great cellars in our small New York apartments. You know, we're kind of at the whims of our landlord's climate control. So we see some interesting things going on with these beers that are, you know, made with the possibility for aging.
Justin, we talked about a couple older beer bars in New York that do have good cellars. Can you... Anything that you want to mention?
Adobe Blues in Staten Island.
For real, huh?
Yeah, I just saw Gale's Prize from 2005 on their list. A couple of other interesting oldies. I did not inquire if they were actually available, but you know, I was excited to see that exists. It's an unusual restaurant.
Yeah, they've been there for a while. I think the manager,
Ryan.
I saw
your good beer seal on the mirror.
Yeah, he had a good beer seal a while ago. Also, I know in the city, Mugs Ale House.
Yeah.
He's got a pretty good cellar, or has had one.
They're closing at the end of this week.
Is he?
It's their last week, yeah.
So maybe you guys should go there and see what's left in the cellar. And Sam Barbieri from Waterfront Ale House. He also, these like old school guys went back to the early 90s. That they used to collect more stuff. You know, they would buy multiple vintages.
I think you and I went to a Waterfront one time and ordered some, I can't remember what we ordered, but something old that was way off.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, I think I do. Ooh.
But you don't really know what you're going to get. You just don't know.
But I think that's what's fun about it. You know, it's like we're so used to all this like fresh stuff and we're looking for any kind of mark of age to do the reverse of it and actually be seeking it out and seeking change and development is kind of cool to switch things up.
Yeah. So what is this? This has got like a basil nose.
So this is McKellar and Lindeman Spontan Basil from 2015.
And I'm not going to say why it was still in the cellar. I mean, some of these beers at the time, you know, they were a little weird. Well, this is also a 750. Yeah. You know, at one time, I was buying cases of 750s, you know, interesting Belgian beers in particular. And, like, that whole case would sell over a year. And that was a pretty decent bottle list. But I did feel that, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, the large format bottles stopped selling. And maybe that's why. I'm wondering, because at one point when I used to get McKellar, you know, there's trends in sales. I would get McKellar, and no matter what it was, it would sell in a couple months. So the fact that this sat there for a year and didn't sell, it's probably more about the format, isn't it? Or is it just the trendiness of McKellar? Or is it just an oddball beer?
I mean, it might be all of the above.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
This is also, I mean, you know, this is a lambic-based beer, or something that can stand to age and change, and I think it's something that people do age. So
it's a win for us. Thank you for not selling it.
Thank you guys for selecting it. I have to say it's better than it was. I think I remember having it when it, again, another beer that's done better with, this is only like 3 years of age, so.
Jimmy, when you had it, was it, I mean, obviously on the nose, it's super, like super herbal, but on the palate, I wouldn't say it's overwhelming now. When you had it originally, was it like just way too much? Or?
I don't remember, but I think that it's definitely more balanced.
Nice.
Yeah, it's almost like a lambic gruit or something. It's like it's all about the like that, you know, greenhouse of aromas right at first whiff, and then it's really well balanced and just nice easy acidity.
Yeah, that would be fun food beer.
Oh yeah, pizza beer.
Maybe.
So, for the uninitiated, what's the deal with what happens to the beer as it ages? That kind of changes it into a more mellow flavor, and I would like to know a little bit more about that.
Who wants to talk?
I mean,
Dr. Megan.
A couple of different things can happen depending on what kind of beer it is and what kind of fun yeasty bacteria things are in there. I mean, if you're thinking more like these big sugar beers, like barley wines and old ales, I think the type of age that we're talking about more there is just a general mellowing and, I mean, let's just say like smoothing out of flavors, a lot of which is due to oxidation, not necessarily critters. but with a lot of these things, like this Spontan Basil, it's a mouthful, you know, the change that you're seeing there is less from the exposure to oxygen and, you know, the effects that can have on the beer, and more just yeast that doesn't act fast. Brewer's yeast acts super fast, and it makes all of the changes it's going to make and eats through all the sugar that it's going to eat pretty quickly. I mean, like on a relative basis. But like Brettanomyces, that's a yeast that can continue to act for an extended period of time. It doesn't even start acting on the sugars that it can eat until, you know, pretty much the brewer's yeast is done snacking on its food. So it'll just continue to act and, you know, eat the sugar, so it'll dry out a little bit. But it'll also create different flavors, or it has the possibility to. So a lot of times with these beers, you'll just notice that they get drier, they get a little sharper, they can develop more carbonation, lose carbonation. I mean, the sky's kind of the limit, which is what's cool about this, is that, you know, we have like a general idea of what could happen, but there's a thousand different variables that could affect it, which is why this is so cool, because, I mean, it was like totally a mystery, like what could have happened in that basement in that period of time.
No, it's cool. Let's just take a short break because we're going to have to do a little mention. We'll be back in a few minutes here on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Located in New York's Finger Lakes region, Ithaca boasts an authentic craft beverage experience, tasty farm-to-table culinary adventures, and scenic outdoor recreation. As the saying goes, Ithaca is gorgeous. The city is home to 150 waterfalls and gorges sprinkled through its downtown and sloping hillsides. State parks and acres of natural lands offer outdoor recreation for every level of enthusiast. Come stroll among the cool ravines, scenic hiking trails, and natural vistas. Ithaca is home to Ivy League Cornell University and Ithaca College, resulting in an influx of new cultures, new tastes, and new energy every year. There's so much to explore, from art galleries and museums to unique attractions like the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Ithaca sits at the heart of a blossoming heritage and craft cider industry. Some of these delicious ciders can be bought in market, but many of the most unique varieties can only be experienced with a visit to Ithaca and this great cider region. Go to visitithaca.com to get inspired and plan your trip today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, this is our Lost Bottles episode. We've got the Beer Table crew of experts pulled out some cellared bottles of really good beers and cider from the Jimmy's Number 43 space. This is pretty cool, and I want to give a big shout out. You know, one great thing about owning a craft beer bar for many years is that you get to know and trust your salespeople. And a big shout out to B.R. Roya at Shelton Brothers and the guys at Be United who have pretty much consistently kept me up to date with, you know, the better bottlings of things. And I feel like I was lucky that I got to know what I would generally stick with certain brewers and know their beers. So I don't really take too much credit for myself, but, you know, the staff. And that's how I met Justin. Justin, you were working at Be United, so you have a pretty good background on this stuff too. I mean, what are some breweries that you would instantly pick and think of cellaring from your experience?
Well, we're about to dig into one of them, which is definitely one of the more unusual breweries that, you know, I honestly don't know if they're what they're up to today, if they're still brewing or not. Should have looked into that, but
I was just thinking, I don't think I've ever had this beer fresh.
Yeah, I mean, I've only ever had like super old vintages. He's Jean-Louis Diet is a school teacher. He brews one day a month, or at least that's the way it used to be. It's a steam powered brewery, which is why it's called Brasserie à Vapeur. And it's to be kind, not the most sanitary environment. It's, you know, it's wild and open and leather belts pulling things, and, you know, it's very, very old school. So the beers are hyper inconsistent, but because of that, also sometimes, you know, really interesting and fun surprises. So this is a, what, 2003 Brasserie à Vapeur?
Yeah, 03, Saison Pipe. And it
was one of those times I stumbled on to a great surprise. I would say it smells like Pipe. But, and this is one of the beers that we bought already aged. So yeah. If it's 2003, I probably bought it in maybe 2015. Maybe a year before that. And as you were opening the bottle, Gavin, just talk us through it, because it was very exciting for me. You opened it, and there was a cork. And the cork didn't look dry. It looked.
No, we definitely had a little bit of seepage through the cork, which makes you a little nervous.
And the cork, the cap over the cork was 45% rust.
Real rusty. It took some effort to get it off.
It may have come that way.
It's
that's the other thing.
Who knows?
We got it. It was 10 or 12 years old already.
Yeah.
So.
you know, and there's a risk that it's either going to be a gusher and just explode all over the place, or that's going to be totally still, and both have happened in the past. But we pulled that cork out, and we heard a little, like, whoosh of air, still carbonated, if only faintly.
And there's a little head on it, too. Yeah. I mean, are you surprised by that, Megan? I mean, it's from 2003.
I'm pretty surprised by that, to be honest. I'm also equally surprised that it didn't just explode everywhere, because I've had that happen too many times. Yeah.
So with this beer, Justin, I mean, knowing Bee United, since it was sold to me retail and probably when it was 11, maybe 12 years old, where was it from 2003? Was it at the brewery or was it at the distributor?
Most likely it was in Connecticut for most of that time. And I'm sure, you know, it probably wasn't released new. I don't think there's any particular rhyme or reason or tradition that he has with when or how he releases. Very inconsistent, as I said. So
you're saying just cool. Bee United with their they do have vintage.
Oh, for sure.
Program
the
and they have really good
mature things and yeah.
So the stuff will get sent. He'll import it to Connecticut and age it there before he distributes. Sure. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the few people that's doing that with beers.
Yeah,
this is pretty great. What do you guys think of it? I mean, this is pretty cool. I mean, I'll tell you honestly, delicious. The last time I had it, I didn't like it as much. Another beer, I didn't like it as much as now. And maybe because it was in, we had like a Battle of the Belgians, more of a beer tasting setting. But on its own, it's I think it's drinking good.
I think the last time I had it was maybe a 2013. So, you know, I probably had it a year and a half ago. It was totally still, equal parts oxidized and kind of watery and like too acidic. It wasn't the best version of this I'd ever had, but this is. You know, tiny touches of almost like baseball mitt leather, lemon peel, great little acidity, beautiful texture left over from that the CO2. It's done really well.
But there could be a lot of bottle variation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone recently, we were all together for beer table holiday get together, and I think we opened, was it 05? The Gales Prize?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we opened two different bottles, and one was just amazing, totally delicious. And one was not terrible, but wasn't quite as great and a little bit weirder. And even, you know, in the same case of beer, you'll have great variation over age.
Was the one that you had in 2013, was it bottled improperly, or was that just the way it came out?
I'm not really sure. I think it could just be, due to, you know, what they didn't plan on getting into the bottle this time around. And that time it was bottled too clean and just, you know, the yeast that they used got through everything and kind of died. Mm. And this time there were some, you know, bonus critters from a less than savory environment that gave this bottle its personality.
I've definitely had some screw-ups, too, with beers that I've matured that I've, you know, basically due to mishandling and moving into a place that I didn't have a cool place to store. And we've seen big flaws because of me mishandling beer. So we try to do better now.
And then this brewery, again, Brasserie Vapeur, I mean, what's his bottling system like? Is he doing hand bottling?
It's hand bottling.
Yeah, so you never know.
It's a
washed one, didn't...
Yeah, I mean, this is it's truly one of the historical classics. I mean, it's like a... If it's not officially, it needs to be a museum. It's a really cool place.
What I'd like to do is, we're not going to be on the show that much longer, but it would be fun to taste it in an hour and see
for sure.
If it holds. That's one thing I remember from vintage wine, how it holds up once you open it. And another thing to point out is just the care that you guys take with things. I keep calling you guys the beer table experts, but I mean it. And I feel like because you guys got these out of my cellar and you cared for them and you wiped them clean, I feel like they're all going to be showing... their best. Did you use some, you know, intuition or science to pick these bottles? Because we haven't picked a bad one yet.
I think it was mostly gut instinct, right? Just grab what looks good.
I mean, Noah and I spent a couple days with a lot of, you know, rubbing alcohol solution, spray bottles, toothbrushes, rubber gloves, and just getting these things all into the best condition that they could be in, and then came up with a rating system for, you know, what, you know, definitely had cork rot, what was just unsellable because we didn't know what the hell it was, or what actually seemed to, you know, weather the age really nicely. And we brought a little bit of everything except for the cork rotted guys, just based on what would be like a fun, you know, progressive tasting.
Great. So let's keep going. What's next?
It looks like we've got, let me double check the year on this, some Schneider Aventinus. We've got, what year do we have here?
Is that it? Just old.
Just old. That can't be that 14, old because that's 14. Got the new label on it. Yeah.
14. Is there a date on it?
Yeah, 14.
There is. So I probably got it in 2015.
And then we have a fresh bottle to compare it to.
We can't call it fresh. I bought it at a deli in Bay Ridge that I discovered that the other stuff I bought was already a year old. So we have mixed samples here.
Fresher.
It's more fresh.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you like one of my great. I guess we can call it vintage beer if it's a year old. Out about 10 years ago, Brooklyn Brewery Garrett Oliver used to make a collaboration beer with Schneider. I don't know if it was called Hop Schneider or Schneider.
The Hopfenweiss.
Mm-hmm. The Hopfenweiss. Yeah. And we got a 1/6 that had been in Brooklyn Brewery, I think, or it might have been at B United. And it was a 1 year old 1/6. And that beer was amazing. And I'm a fan of a lot. I think a lot of good beers benefit from 1 or 2 years of sitting, but cellaring. But it just doesn't seem like it's possible. Like, how can we. How come everything we're tasting has benefited from being lost in this cold cellar? But what can we do to encourage this more? Because there's not really a system for this. It's hard that nobody wants to store beer.
We need to slow our rolls, Jimmy. That's what we need to do. We need to slow down.
Well, I think what Gavin was saying earlier that, you know, every time we take in a case of something that we think is worthwhile, you know, more folks should be like try experimenting a little bit and don't just worry about the dollars and pull aside a few bottles and set them away so you can learn something in years to come.
I think in addition to that, it's good to recognize what you have and look for signs of something that might be good to age. I mean, like if you're getting, you know, if you're waiting in line for the, you know, can release of other half, yeah, drink that fresh. Sure, go for it. But, you know, if you're buying something that's fermented with Brettanomyces or just spontaneously fermented or something with, you know, a great big sugar content or something that's, you know, extremely strong and robust or, you know, crazy bitter in the case of a couple American barley wines, those can, you know, benefit from age, or they sometimes are designed to need age to make them palatable. We recently tried a 6-year-old barley wine. I can't remember the name of the brewery. It was a gift from an employee of ours. And it was still extremely bitter because it was, you know, hopped to death to preserve it for 8 to 10 years. So just recognizing what's available out there to age is something that I think has been lost in the last 10 years of, you know, fresh beer taking over.
What about this beer? I mean, I can taste so many things in it. Megan, this.
Well, I mean, compared to regular Aventinus, which I've not had in a moment, but right off the bat for me, it's seemingly much more mellow and with a much more mild spice content to it, to the point that I think you could almost call this one deceptive. Like, it doesn't taste up to the strength that I know it is.
So do you think that it didn't get better with age?
No, not necessarily that. I just think it has changed. And I think that this is one that we have aged before previously.
Yeah, I mean, in this case, I would argue that this bottle for me is definitely not better than the Young Fresh. This is like dead
Aventinus. I love Young Fresh Aventinus, yeah. And it's like
so,
bready.
It's just so bright and spicy and just rich in character and so much texture that the old one, I don't think it has, in this particular bottle's instance, gained anything. I think it's lost texture, it's lost aroma. But I've had experience with other old Aventinus bottles that have been great, so... Yeah. You know, we win and lose.
Do you want to taste the one that you guys bought recently?
Yeah, it's great.
It's a wild difference.
It's been a little while since I've had fresh Aventinus, and it's, you know, cloves and brown sugar, touch of tobacco. It's really a beautiful beer, but I don't want to say that the old one was bad, but it kind of reminded me of, like, a Mexican hot chocolate that got cold.
Well, that's it. It felt more flat and the malty, like a flat malty drink. But yeah, the fresh one is amazing. I have my Aventina story. I got to tell you guys this. 2001, October, just after 9/11, I had an old bar restaurant, East Village. It was called Patio Bar, Muggsy's Chow Chow Restaurant. And we had a cool German woman who did live painting. So she went up on the side of the building with a harness and kind of guerrilla painted an unused billboard. And people gathered around, and it was our Oktoberfest party. And what was the beer that I drank? Aventinas. And I drank eight of them. It's a strong beer. And I was definitely, I had kind of this great buzz for about 3 days. So, to me, yes, the strong, fresh Aventinas is something I highly recommend for celebration. So that cursed my image of Oktoberfest is that why would you make a light kind of ambush beer when you could drink Aventinas for Oktoberfest? That's celebration beer to me. Who has a good story like that about Aventinas? I bet you do, Justin.
Oh, man. Nothing quite that dramatic, but that's a great one.
It was mostly about the German artist, the German artist who had a harness and rappelled down onto this billboard and did a live painting while we all drank Aventinas. It's pretty awesome. Yeah. But you know,
I miss the old New York.
Too, world was Jimmy. Different after 9/11, and also after 9/11, since we're going back in time for about 6 months afterwards, the city was very different and. There were different types of alerts. Orange alerts meant that people were afraid to come in the city, so all your reservations canceled, but you had a really great diehard group of people that bonded together. So cheers to you guys. That's my Aventina story.
I love it.
And I love it. So what's next?
Do another side-by-side because these are a lot of fun. We've got an ancient old label Dogfish Head 60 Minute here.
I think it's from 2005.
Let's see. Is it on the neck?
So I'll just disclaimer. I think that this Dogfish Head was there as a sample, I don't think it's something that I ever bought.
That's great.
So I wouldn't have bought that.
Is it safe to say that we can all assume that this is not going to have aged well?
We're gonna find out.
No, it's not safe.
We should not assume things like that.
We should not assume that.
This is part of what I love about finding.
But you also don't know, right? You could be surprised. I thought the Aventinas at 5 years would be great.
Continuous hopping maybe preserved this beer.
I'm still ready to be surprised.
Should we do old or new for us?
Old.
I received a gift from one of our first employees of the Brooklyn location that she had a house party at one point and left a case of Corona Light and all sorts of just wonderful beer in her backyard for a year outside in Brooklyn, and thought it would be a nice gift for, I think, our first anniversary party, and brought that by, and we cracked all that open, and that included some old 6-point bottles too. And some interesting homebrew, and it was actually pretty fun to taste through some delicious old outside matured Corona, among other things. So I'm an advocate of things of tasting beer, even if you assume it's going to be horrible.
I mean, I know with wine, it's like you never know what vintage is going to do well, and you know, there's certain collectible wines. There's such expertise and you know, knowledge about it that usually what. Experts predict that this vintage is going to be age worthy and this one isn't.
But this one isn't.
Everyone's making the most horrible faces right now.
Wasn't that a good intro? I set you guys up. I love that.
Yeah. For this briefest split second, I forgot that was in my glass and I picked it up and got just a nose full of cardboard and poison.
So this is like a 14-year-old.
Single IPA.
Single IPA.
Is this the first? This is the first IPA we've tried, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Is it such that IPAs might not age as well as the general recommendation
is that you not age them.
But the line between barley wine and 120-minute continuously hopped IPA is very fine. So
yeah. But yeah. I think that would be more American barley wine and less English barley wine.
And I would just say that this is probably, I'm trying to give myself some credit. This is probably a random bottle that they found. They really dug through. This cellar had, at one point, had 500 different beers by number in it. So there was could have been a lot of beers there. And if we had that beer, it would have moved. So I don't think any IPA ever lasted more than a month. In our cellar.
We're not blaming you, Jimmy.
Definitely something that we saw, and it wasn't, this is going to be amazing because it's so old. It was, we know we can get this beer fresh, and we want to see how it moved in 10 years.
Yeah. But again, to give you a sense of stuff, IPAs do move, and I also didn't really buy much of it in bottle. Something that I've tried to focus more on draft because we knew that it was going to move, and then these other more unusual beers that were stronger, we'd buy in bottle. And at one point, that was the strategy. I don't know if that's still a strategy. What is it like now, you know, retail? I mean, are you guys, is that the same case? Things that people drink more of and fresher you put on draft, and then you might hold on to some more interesting bottles. It's still the same strategy,
well,
right?
Well, I mean, I think for us, it's a little bit different just being in our location and given our clientele. I think people are less prone to get draft beer to take onto the train as they are bottles and cans. When we first opened, people were very hesitant to get cans, and now we're, what, 90% cans, 80% cans?
88.72.
Yeah. That was what this
as of,
was.
As of today, yeah.
As that of today.
Was, what about Memorial Day weekend?
Yeah.
A little less than that, actually, because I think there were a lot of people bringing large format bottles and growlers to barbecues, so that will dilute the can sales a little bit.
You guys must have some... We're actually doing July 23rd, a consumer date of beer sales show with some industry analysts.
I'm in.
Yeah, you should come to that, Gavin. So you're in. But so this is the 60-minute IPA. It's good, you know?
Yeah, it is good. I didn't actually hate the old one as much as you guys did. I like that it was actually like a really chilled out version of the exact same thing. I mean, it shows a lot of flaws, but I liked its mellowness.
I will put up for me. Ultimately, I'm going to give a plug for really good retailers. Same way we care about the importer and the whole supply chain is really important. You know, I remember having guys come up and say, "Hey, man, look." I remember back when Heady Topper was the thing 4 years ago. I was like, "Oh, I got a Heady Topper." I'm like, "Well, how many like car trunks had it been in by the time you got it and brought it to me?" You know, I want to know that. Wow, I go to Beer Table because I know that they first their suppliers are on top of it, and it's a cold chain, right? What else do you guys want to tell me about picking your suppliers and the importance of it? Because then I know when I go to Beer Table, the beer is going to be in top quality. And these guys are looking at it, inspecting the bottles, dusting it off for me.
You know, I think a lot of the, since I started doing the purchasing, a lot of the brands that we carry come from, you know, self-distributed brands, which is always really nice to do because you're interacting with the people that are, you know, making it, you know, selling it and delivering it. It's all the same family. And it's cool to see where those brands, when they're, you know, grow to a certain size, you know, what distributors they decide to go to and why. Is it for, you know, great representation? Is it for great, you know, supply chain management and, you know, refrigerated warehouse to refrigerated trucks? Is it, you know, because they get more control over their own brand? So a lot of different decision-making goes into picking a distributor, but I think in terms of picking brands to sell, Little Blind is a new brand that we just started carrying, and, you know, how excited he was for his brewery to be out there, how much care he took in, you know, walking Noah and me through a tasting, explaining, you know, kind of speaking to our level about, you know, why he chose the, you know, bacteria strain he chose to sour his beers. Like, everything about it was, you know, very, you know, passionate. So we were able to say with, you know, a 1 ounce taste, this guy's going to do great things and we're happy to sell his beer.
If I could jump in for a minute, you guys are also incredibly diligent about receiving and ordering. So I think that plays a huge part in it. I know that I was not always the best at that when I was doing the ordering, but I mean, like, meticulously checking every case to make sure that there's no mixed cases of different dates, bottling dates or canning dates, you know, really staying on top of the inventory list to know what is new to that list versus what you know has been sitting on that list for a long time. And sometimes that can be a good thing. If a single case of J.W. Lee's has been on the list for like 3 weeks, there's a chance it might actually exist, and there's a chance that we definitely want it at the store, you know?
Or Singing Blonde.
Yeah.
Well, cheers to you guys. Again, a toast to your professionalism, the importance of good retailers and all swaths. And it's still, I prefer going to a good restaurant, bar, bottle shop to get my drinks. And you guys are stellar. I think we have time for taste this last beer and tell us about it, Gavin, because we actually have a great show on next, Tech Bites.
Oh, man. 2009 Christmas Ale from Goose Island, before the big brand days. I couldn't find very much information because I believe they stopped making Christmas Ale shortly after. But it's super caramelly, a little cinnamon.
It's Christmas.
I can't believe you found this. It's something that I remember, before Goose Island got bought by AB, we were getting some of their bigger beers, and I remember they had a barley wine called Lord Henry or something.
That sounds right.
Yeah, and I remember we had a couple bottles of that too. So it's great to see what brewers can do. I mean, Greg Hall, I'm going to just say that I've met him and I like him, and I think that he made some pretty good beers. And Greg, you're missed in the craft beer community, dude. So anything you want to say about this beer, Megan?
I would have assumed it would be much spicier and have still a bit more body to it, but it's actually really flattened out over time, which I guess with, 10 years of age, there's a great chance that that could happen. My guess is if there was maybe a bit more sugar content to it, or if maybe it was, I think that I saw you just pull off a cap, maybe if it was cork and cage, it might have developed a little bit differently. But still interesting to check out. I mean, when was the last time you saw that label,
It's mostly held up.
We're gonna take some photos. Everybody's here gonna take photos, and we'll be posting on Instagram because this is pretty cool. I also feel like this is something that we could probably do about 3 more shows of.
Definitely,
Jimmy. Do we have time for one more?
Let's do one more because we're gonna close out because Tech Bites is coming on.
No, we love Tech Bites. This is wait, Gavin. Do you have your phone?
I don't remember what year
this is.
Old.
This is a collaboration between De Molen and. Ron Pattinson, right?
From 2011, yep.
It's 2011. Did a historical recipe, 1914 London Triple Stout. Thought this would be a really cool one to check out, because we know you love Ron Pattinson.
Oh, yeah. If you don't know him, what's his blog? Shut the fuck up about BarclayPerkins.com. Yeah. he came. We were lucky we had him when Pretty Things was at its prime. Ron Pattinson came over a couple times to the States. We've done a couple shows with Ron Pattinson, if you Google it. But we do love it. So, yeah, we got some Pretty Things. We actually had the stash of... I'll give a shout-out. We had a stash of Pretty Things when Pretty Things closed. I think it was the fall of 2015. I know we bought the last 2 cases of a couple of their beers from their distributor. And I still might have some of that, too. So we'll do another show like this. This was really great. So let's just taste this beer again. If it's Ron Pattinson, it's a historical recipe. Anyone want to talk about that? Any background on it?
I know nothing about this beer, but if I was to guess based on when he's talking about the recipe would be based on or would have originated in the style, is that there might be a touch of Brettanomyces in here that would have naturally occurred in some London porters and things of that ilk.
And generally from following him, we know that before World War I and there was a grain shortage because a lot of grain in Britain was imported. Probably the grain bill was higher, so there was probably more malt to begin with, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Higher sugar content, so.
Upon
a lot of
tasting,
good stuff.
I would now say there's probably no Brettanomyces in that. That is just like straight chocolate cake.
It smells like chocolate cola, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But this was a really special show, guys. I hate to cut it short.
That's okay.
I will tell you this, that this is something we can keep doing because this
you,
has
Jimmy.
Been really
Thanks,
fun. Last comments by everybody. The thrill of going into a dank, dirty, closed restaurant basement. And find some good beers.
Yeah, I'll say after spending a couple hours in that basement digging through these beers, when we got here to Roberta's today, I did ask for a larger size dump bucket because I thought this was going to be a way riskier tasting than it turned out to be.
This was great. You guys picked some wonderful ones.
Yeah, guys, drink old beer.
Mm-hmm.
Justin?
No, thanks, Jimmy. It was a nice flashback for me to remember the old Jimmy's number 43 and to wish it well by doing this tasting.
Thank you, and it was great talking about it. Definitely, if some of you guys, there's a bunch of you that listen that have had beer bars for a number of years. If you got old sellers, I think that Justin and Beer Table might be the guys to call because there's not too many people really really interested in this subject. I think more and more people will, and I think as the more of the breweries that we know, I think as they get more established, like Brooklyn Brewery for sure and Ghost Bottles and stuff, I think as breweries become more established, they could probably start some of these programs. I think right now everybody's so focused on trying to pay their bills and turning out beers that sell. But this is a great, great inspiration for everybody. So thanks so much. And I appreciate it because I feel like the work I did was worth something. But again, so much of it was about the suppliers I had and sales reps that always got me the best beers. So cheers to the guys in the industry and ladies. Gosh, we have to say goodbye, guys. So thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, assistant producer, Aaliyah Papes, engineer, Matt Patterson. I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio. We'll catch you next time and here on Heritage Radio Network. All right.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Woo!
Thank
for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.